You're listening to For the Republic, a love letter to Star Wars animation.
Hello there.
All right, welcome back to our Bad Batch recaps here on For the Republic, a love letter to Star Wars animation. It is Andrew and Donovan back here once again to talk about a different approach, the fourth episode of season three, really continuing on with the story from last week of Omega and Crosshair and their escape from Mount Tantus. You might be wondering, wow, this is up a little bit late, and that is totally our fault. We apologize. We had some scheduling conflicts the weekend. So you're going to get two recaps this week. So happy days. We're recording this on a Monday as we speak. I am almost an hour and a half away from my showing of Dune Part 2. So I am very excited, and I'm sure I will not shut up about it when we record next time. So let's talk about the Bad Batch. This season has been great so far, but before we get into the Bad Batch, it is time for our favorite segment here on the podcast, and that is the Jedi Archives.
Perhaps the archives are incomplete.
So, last week we had on Savion Lins of Stardust Records. Go back and watch that episode if you missed it. We talked about the first three episodes of season three. It was a great episode, but we all had some killer nominations in my mind. I voted for yours over mine. Because I was
I'm touched, dude.
That Rebel Thank you Strike so much. Intro, I was like, oh my god, that's perfect. And I thought, like, oh, you know, I got Batcher, it's relevant for the episode, I might win it. Well, unfortunately, when you have the UI developer of Jedi Survivor retweet your choice, it ends up happening. So the UI section of the Art of Jedi Survivor is our newest inductee into the archives. Savvy is still undefeated. She is 2-for-2 with her nominations.
A worthy addition.
And a worthy addition. It was close at first, and then he retweeted it, and Savvy ended up winning with 81.3% of the votes. So, yeah.
That was a
straight up knockout. So shout out Jordan DeVries for retweeting that and for the kind words. We really appreciate it, and great job. I'm barely into Survivor, but just the customization and everything compared to the first game is just out of this world good. So
the customization is incredible, the amount of things you can like do with Cal, and it's like no two cutscenes. Like one of the cool things is going on YouTube and like looking up all the different playthroughs and seeing that how, you know, so many people's different playthroughs are like so unique because of the different play styles. Yeah.
So I'm going to start off this week with my nomination because I have a clip and it's a bit lengthy, but so for some context, last night, my friend sends me this Twitter thread of this, in 2003, on this Chilean channel, they were airing the original trilogy. And they decided instead of just airing traditional commercials, they would get around it by inserting the ads almost seamlessly into the movie themselves. So what you're about to see is, you know, a classic from A New Hope. And we'll see where...
You fought in the Clone Wars?
Yes. I was once a Jedi Knight, the same as your father.
I wish I'd known him.
He was the best star pilot in the galaxy and a cunning warrior. I understand you've become quite a good pilot yourself. And he was a good friend. Which reminds me, I have something here for you. Your father wanted you to have this when you were old enough.
Cerveza cristal. Cerveza cristal.
Still not over it. Oh my, when I tell you it took me out, I was like, that's my nomination this week.
And it gets funnier when you add more dialogue in, like, your father wanted you to have this when you were old enough. but your uncle wouldn't allow it.
And then if you go through the thread, I'm sure you can find it. I retweet at Starlight Andrew. I retweeted it. There's another one where it's one of Palpatine's scenes from Return of the Jedi, and he like reaches out and it segues into the same beer ad. It's perfect.
Like all the and, Jedi exist.
Whatever they
crystal.
Whatever they were up to in 03 in Chile, you were ahead of the times, because that it took me out. So that's my nomination this week. Donovan, what do you have in store for us this week?
Well, I don't know how I'm going to compete with that stretch of cinema that you just nominated there, Andrew. But I'm going to, for this week's edition of the Jedi Archives, I'm going to nominate a character from the High Republic. Because I finally kind of broken through with my reading backlog of Phase 2. I finally, earlier this weekend, finished Quest for the Hidden City. It was really good. Really enjoyed it. But then I started the Battle of Jeddah script by George Mann. And I blitzed this.
The huge boy.
When I tell you I blitzed this thing over the whole weekend, it was that good. It was just, yeah. This is kind of why when we did the top five rankings that I wish I had read more High Republic, because sorry, Mando Season 3, you're getting bumped down.
You're getting bumped down for Battle of Jeddah.
This is entering my top five Star Wars stories. This honestly fixed so much of my lingering issues with Phase 2 and like how the story kind of just was felt a little bit disconnected. This just brought all the different threads together. To segue to the character I'm nominating, it all kind of centers around one Jedi in particular, Salandra Sho, who is possibly my favorite Jedi of Phase 2, aside from Gelen Atai, the protagonist of Convergence and Cataclysm. Salandra's just so cool. She, you know, not only is she like a badass, she has a great, unique kind of like Master Padawan relationship with her Padawan Rupa. She also carries a shield in addition to her lightsaber. Yeah, she has a shield that she like wields against threats, and she literally uses the Force to ping pong it around to protect people and attack enemies like Captain America. It's such a cool kind of little wrinkle to have with the Jedi, and it also helps that she is such an exemplary she's such an example of what the Jedi should be. She's compassionate, she's kind, but she also has like a sense of humor, and she's very much central to the events of Battle of Jeddah and also Quest for the Hidden City. So I definitely recommend both. I haven't even listened to the audio drama, so that's how I know. I that's kind of like speaks for the quality of that story, in my opinion. But yeah, Salandra Sho is my nomination for this week's archives.
I am excited. You said Jedi with the shield, and that's all I needed to hear. I am still very behind with Phase 2 and the High Republic in general, but that is a character I am definitely going to be on the lookout for when I do my readings, because, yeah, no, I'm excited for that. So those are our nominations. You said that you don't know how you can compete, but, you know, our listeners love the High Republic, so it's probably going to be close. But you've got Salandra Sho, and you have the weird Chilean Star Wars commercial thing. You know, I'm watching that, and I'm like, oh, man, like, I love this. It's such a good scene. And, like, Alec Guinness's delivery is maybe – it's one of my favorite, like, acted scenes in all the movies. And, like, there's a reason why he's the only Star Wars actor that's ever been nominated for an Oscar for a performance in a Star Wars film. But then just getting there, it's just like...
It's just great.
I'm getting hooked. I'm like, oh, okay, whoops.
he took, basically, like, he managed to make a load of, like, made-up stuff that George Lucas was just sort of only half forming at the time, because he was obviously, like, only... He'd only done the broad strokes of the greater mythology. And Alec Guinness took all of that stuff and made it sound, gave it weight, gave it depth that we didn't even fully grasp the scale of. And yet when you go back and watch that film and you listen to his delivery, you feel the weight of it, even after like all of the other projects and shows and films that have come out and recontextualized the original trilogy. But yeah, I don't know how I'm going to compete with that. it just gets funnier the more dialogue you add into it, the more you
yeah.
Your father and I always used to enjoy a good crystal before we flew into battle in our Jedi starfighters. I always told Anakin, don't drink and drive, though.
Oh man, that's the alternate reality we need right there, is if that scene continued on, just A New Hope just changes radically just based on that.
Mike Chen, if you are writing another Anakin and Obi-Wan story, I implore you, put a Star Wars drink in the novel that actually is like called Crystal, because we will all appreciate it very much.
I just gotta wonder, like, if they show that, like, does it just like, did they just show him getting the lightsaber, or is the movie forever altered? Like, it's like, how do you get this saber?
I thought he grabbed the beer bottle. Yeah. I showed that to my mom earlier, and she was asking the same question. She was like, "That doesn't even make sense. It's so weird."
We will. Oh. I guess we'll never know.
We'll never know. Such is the strange way of Star Wars 2003 Chili Edition.
I'm forever aghast. So those are our nominees. Vote for your favorite, and we'll go from there. So let's get into the episode proper. This was another, it was up until like the very end of the episode, it was all Crosshair and Omega centric. And I think it was a bold choice of having two episodes in a row without Hunter and Wrecker in it for the majority of the episode. But I think it was the right choice, honestly, because it, like, you didn't have any lingering, like, oh man, like, I want to get back to this. Like, if this was just them continuing their search for Crosshair and Omega, even though now we know, like, hey, they escaped. So they're out there and they're not on Tantus still. Having it be like that next destination and like literally pick up right as they're escaping still, and then they have to crash land on the planet and kind of go from there, and we see Omega's hustle game going again. I think it was the smart choice narratively, and I thought it led to a really engaging, really fun episode.
I totally agree there, dude. I really feel like... like you said, like, there was no lingering kind of question of like, oh, we really want to get back to this, because like, by keeping it on Crosshair and Omega, you kind of feel that there felt like there were stakes, even though this felt like such a smaller scale story compared to some of the earlier episodes. You know, this is very kind of much a laying low episode, trying to keep out of trouble until like the sort of craziness at the end. But like, this was an episode that, again, like the opening episode, had a very kind of Andor feel to it in terms of like the kind of ideas it was like going for, because you've got on the one hand this kind of buddy relationship, like buddy cop relationship between Crosshair and Omega, this kind of like clash of moralities and like ways that they want to go about things. But you've also, like, in through the backdrop of the episode, you're kind of exploring what it's like to live under a fascist system such as the Empire's. And yeah, it's really kind of like I remember like the Kynes account like posting like earlier in the week, just before the episode dropped, that Omega was going to have, hinting that Omega was going to have some kind of like reckoning with reality. And it seemed like it was going to be a really like brutal episode for Omega. But I think what they were very right to kind of tease that, because this episode is all about kind of showing Omega the difficulties of living under a fascist system, because as we kind of see later in the episode, she very much wants to do things like as bloodlessly as she can, like without any kind of casualties, without having to like just immediately go in guns blazing like Crosshair just wants to do every time. And the more we kind of go on, the more we kind of see that, you know, as the more we learn, is like Omega learns that living under a fascist system, you know, the fascists will always, and I mean the pun fully here, they will always stack the deck against you. Like, no matter no matter how you choose to play things, they are always going to try and shift things. So
there was that, like, oh, you won fair and square. Here's your credits. Oh, wait, hold on.
Oh, yeah.
I forgot about the fine.
Little convenient caveat that like puts me back on top and you like under my boots.
It's like, oh yeah, gambling's illegal here. Fine.
Yeah. It's the minute that happened, I just shook my head. I was like, I knew something like this was gonna happen. Ugh.
Mm-hmm. And then so the crux of this episode is they crash land on this planet after they're escaping from the Empire. They need to find a way to get off. They go to the transportation center.
It was a spaceport. It was kind of like a spaceport area. Yeah,
there we go. That's
very similarly designed to the kind of like spaceports in Lothal and Mos Eisley that we'd seen. And I kind of appreciated that kind of universal design. It kind of like helps give you that visual shorthand of like, oh yeah, I know where this place is. Yeah, and I got to shout out the droid. The droid that like wants a ridiculous. Oh, was it a droid or was it an alien? I think it was an alien, wasn't it? I'm not sure.
It might have been.
But they wanted an obscene bribe, but I just have to I went like
20,000 credits or whatever it was. So they have to get all these credits to board the plane. Board the ship. And of course they hijinks ensue because they're on the run from the Empire, but also they have this giant hound with them too. So
yeah,
they get their nifty disguises and they try to find ways to get the credits in, and they end up settling on Omega hustling people out of money in this card game. And what was cool was the fact that it was entirely new to the universe, which didn't register in my first watch. At first, I just thought like, oh, it's Sabacc. Like my mind just immediately went to that. But no, because I was like, oh, these are different cards and different rules than I remember. But no, the Bad Batch team just created an in-universe game from scratch, and we see it on display in this episode. Second time in the last two seasons where we had like an entirely new thing in the fourth episode of the season, because it was Riot Racing last year.
Yeah,
and now it's this card game. And we see her just go up to this intimidating looking Trandoshan. It's like, oh, how about I play? And then like immediately like gets like a bunch of credits out of him.
She fleeced him. That was what was I couldn't stop laughing at that, the fact that she so completely fleeced this Trandoshan of so many credits, like 30,000 credits. Oh, was it 15,000? I think it was 15,000, wasn't it?
And then
the Imperial kind of comes in.
Imperial, yeah.
But like, what was really funny was the fact that Trandoshan, for however intimidating he looked, he was a fair sport. He wanted to keep playing, even though he was like losing more and more money. And I kind of like, I thought that was a fun little detail about him in just like such a brief stretch of time. But yeah, that card game, it's nice to see more kind of like original kind of stuff making its way into Star Wars, like through like activities and stuff. I like that. I'd say that, oh, maybe we'll get like an official version of the card game, but I said that the last time with Riot Racer, and here I am like still with the clown makeup on, like saying, oh, are they gonna do a Riot Racer game? I don't know,
maybe. We've had official versions of Sabacc before, so I feel like it's not out of the question. But again, we were all like, we kind of gaslit ourselves into thinking that the reason Faster was an episode was because it was a soft pilot for a Riot Racer game. And that has not happened.
Maybe they did make a Riot Racer game and then they had to cancel it because there were no lightsabers. So,
Or maybe it's in Star Wars Hunters when that comes out in 5 years. but don't worry, no, it's releasing this year. It's releasing this year.
We might finally get to play it.
I know. It's like, oh, it's available some places.
Exactly. Like on people's smartphones and stuff. Yeah.
It's nuts. Oops. But my favorite thing that's going on, well, one, it shows how crafty Omega has become and how quickly she picks up on certain things. Like this is, I think, the second time we've seen her do something like this, because she did it with the Space Chess game in season one. So it shows, one, that she's learning stuff from not just the batch, but also characters like Fee and like someone else, that like she's still using in her life, even to get by and to succeed, even though she isn't with those people anymore who will not be named. They're not in this episode.
You're gonna hate me for saying this, but I think we should probably pay a compliment to She Who Shall Not Be Named for actually imparting some skills to Omega.
They wouldn't have been able to.
You did something right. You actually did something right here. Finally, two and a half seasons, and you finally did something right here.
Mm-hmm. So there was that, but also I just loved how Crosshair was just so done with this the whole time.
He was just like, he was so impatient. He was literally just standing there the whole time, just like saying, "But Omega, when am I going to get to kill people? It's the only thing I'm good at." And it's like, and I joke about that, but like, I love this.
That's his struggle right now.
It's his struggle, exactly. Like, he, out of all of the Bad Batch, he is the one character whose skills are the most centered on killing, who are the most suited for killing. It's all about, like, his special skill is like being able to aim super fast, and he's never really been able to picture his life as being anything but a soldier, and here he is now escorting this kid, having to like go against every instinct he's got. And it's really interesting and revealing that, like, at no point does he force the issue. He voices his opinion, and whenever Omega says, I'm not doing that, we're going to do it this way, he actually lets Omega lead and actually lets Omega take point and try her way rather than overruling her. And it's like, it kind of shows a very kind of like subtle respect going between Crosshair and Omega, that he actually cares for her enough that he will let her take point and actually like try her way of doing things, even though he thinks differently. And it's a really nice unspoken thing that goes throughout the episode.
There's multiple times in this episode where he's just like, "No, I'm going to do it my way." And then there's even a point where he goes and leaves after they get the credits, because he just wants to go to the spaceport while Omega wants to go get Batcher, which we'll get to later. But then he just keeps coming back, and he keeps like compromising and doing things her way, because he, again, even though like episode one of the season, he was like, "Oh, I'll leave you first second I can, if I can." He's proving time and time again that that is not the case, and that he will never leave her. Yeah, exactly. And like, he needs to bring her back to her brothers. And I think it's just a really great thing that we keep seeing, but him just being perpetually done the whole time, like, which is even better, like when they're in their disguises, because he's not the mask over his head. So you just only see the expressions on his eyes.
Yeah.
And you can still just see him just being like the done dad. Like, what's my daughter into right now? But then just like, the best moment when Omega finally lets him like do things his way.
Finally. Oh, so good. Yeah, exactly. And then he kicks a load of ass as well. It's so satisfying. I feel like we should now like introduce the villain of the piece that enters the fray after we think Omega's like starting to prove to Crosshair that she, all we need is her way. Suddenly then like an Imperial enters the bar, and he's a bit different, isn't he?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, he comes in the way he was just kind of designed and stuff. I was like, oh, it's Mosk from Andor, and then it just wasn't. But
what are those fermenting pockets, sir?
He wants it, and he's like, oh, it's my game. So he sits down, he plays with Omega, he plays the game. And do they play one game, or is it two? I don't remember.
I think they play more than one, because I think she gets another like 15,000 credits from him, or 10,000. I need to go back and check, but she gets at least several thousand credits from him, which is like, I'm gonna steal a joke from like Alex from Star Wars Explained, because he joked about like what's the exchange rate on the credits, because it's like
the kid outside so is many. Like, for 10,000 credits or whatever you said. It's like, damn.
I think you said 5,000, but it's still like, geez, like what is the exchange rate here? How much is it, like yen, or is it like dollars or British pounds? It's like, what is it? Like,
oh yeah.
I mean, that's not a criticism. I'll love
give you a little tidbit of information for 5,000 US dollars. I'd be like, all right, I'm going to just figure this out.
I felt so tense. Like, was I the only one who felt like really tense when she handed the money over? Because I'm like, how are we going to get less credits? And less? They're going to wind up with nothing at the end of it. Oh, but
we're
going
to have to start a car wash.
But yeah, the Imperial, I'll lemonade wash your stand. I'll wash your speeder for 5,000 credits.
Now I want to see that episode.
Omega's just in the office, like counting it, like doing all of the like stock taking and crosshairs. Like, you know, he's got like a crop top on, just like washing, just washing
the washing the fan art of that right now, please.
Yeah, like Wrecker arrives and immediately like takes a picture. Like, oh,
Andre, what are you doing there, buddy?
You're not gonna believe this. And then like Crosshair just like his like signature thing is he writes 99 nice touch on the windscreen.
99, eh? Nice touch.
Exactly.
To get it in there somehow.
It's like once per episode. Is that I gotta find another excuse for someone play so there's that. And she again, very, very Solo-esque. Like there were a couple things. You mentioned the spaceport. It's also it was very similar to the Corellian spaceport. At the beginning of Solo, even all down to trying to bribe the person there, and it just being completely ridiculous with the amount that they want. But this scene when Omega is playing the Imperial and she reveals the hand, it's very much like the two scenes in Han and Lando are playing Sabacc in Solo. And even then you have it even has the similar, or at least for the first time, the bad twist where Lando cheats in the first game. And then this one, Omega wins and he's like, oh, you beat me fair and square. Here are your credits. Hold on. Did I mention the fine?
There's a little caveat here for you, Omega. You've got to pay the fine. There's no gambling here.
He talks, I kind of have to like shout out the voice actor for like employing a different kind of accent for an Imperial. Cause you know, we've had like snarly English RP accents for Imperials. We've had the odd American, like that one guy from The Mandalorian and also General Veers. But like, I think this is the first time we've had kind of a snarly northerner type as an Imperial. In fact, he's so distinctive that I think it's time for me to revive a sort of a recurring bit that we started back during the Andor days. Yeah. I think it's time for Who Watch. Yeah. I think
I gotta
bring Who Watch back here. Yeah. So the actor
this week,
yeah. So the actor voicing this Imperial, this slimy northerner who's very softly spoken but kind of confident and threatening, it's very disarming. He's voiced by Harry Lloyd, who most people will probably know from Game of Thrones. He was in the first season. He played Viserys Targaryen, the brother of Emilia Clarke's character Daenerys Targaryen, but. Doctor Who fans will know him from series 3 of Doctor Who, David Tennant's second series, where he starred in the the two-part storyline Human Nature and the Family of Blood, which I might say is one of the best modern Doctor Who stories, probably one of my favorite stories of that era. He plays a character called Baines, and I'm going to send you a picture, Andrew, just to like let you know how creepy he is. In this story. He's like, he's a very good actor, Harry Lloyd, at playing kind of villainous characters, for sure. My phone's just loading. But yeah, he was excellent in that story. Here he is now. I'm sending you a picture of him. But yeah, Harry Lloyd, really, really talented actor. Yeah, there it is. Drink it in.
That is a slimy northerner if I've ever seen one before.
Well, he's posh in that. He usually does kind of an RP accent. So I actually appreciate him trying a different accent out for this role. Like, you know, he basically came on.
Yeah,
that's Harry Lloyd. Yes.
So what's going on? What are the scarecrow looking things in the back. What's going on? What's going on?
Okay, so it's a period piece, that episode. It's set like in the 1910s in England, and it's a story where the Doctor and his current companion Martha Jones have, like, they've gone back in time and they're hiding out from some alien life forms who are hunting them, and the Doctor has, like, pretends to be a human. He does like a, he puts a watch thing and a contraption on his head, and it takes his Time Lord essence and locks it away, and then he's like a human physiologically and mentally. He has no memory, and he's basically walking around as this kind of flawed human being, and Martha and his companion is having to keep his secret, and these aliens arrive there and they possess some humans, including Harry Lloyd's character, who's like a schoolboy, who's kind of a prick, but also kind of like, it's very horrific what happens to him. And he basically, they're all these very creepy very kind of Shining-esque characters that all just, they're like a family and stuff, and they want to harvest the Doctor's life force and stuff like that. And Ooh. The Scarecrows, they use a thing called molecular fringe animation where they reanimate them. So the Scarecrows literally, they all like snap around like that and they march around, and there's a whole bit where they like march on the school. It's peak Doctor Who. There's like creepy monsters, human villains.
Sounds creepy to me. Yeah, so kind of like, fits well with his Bad Batch character here.
Yeah, like he brought the full creepy on display with this character. You feel unsettled around him, even though he doesn't seem that threatening at first. There's a real kind of like menacing presence about him, and it's kind of, again, indicative of like the whole fascist thing I was talking about earlier, where, like, you know, he seems a very kind of like insignificant man at first, very kind of insignificant character, but that's the nature of like a fascist system like this, that someone like him, he clearly views himself as like, oh, I'm a big fish in a little pond, and what I'm going to do is exert my authority whenever I think it's necessary. He literally, whenever he has the opportunity to, he always, like, as I said before, stacks the deck so that no matter what Omega does, he always tries to engineer it so that he gets the ultimate satisfaction at the end, the ultimate victory. Like you said, at first it's the fine. Then even when Omega pays it, he takes Batcher. And then when they come to get Batcher, he demands basically the rest of the credits. It's
there's a big rule against pets here on this planet. That'll be
exactly
hefty fine for you. It's like he just wants all the trip. Because at that point, they discover the crashed shuttle, and they start to put two and two together. It's like, oh, where are you from? It's like, oh, we're just passing through. And then he is like, oh, well, Hemlock is on his way. And it's like, oh, shit. It's like, they're done for. But as you mentioned, yes, they do end up taking Batcher. And then Omega goes to get him. Crosshair goes to the spaceport. But then, of course, he ends up coming back and helping her. And there's that great moment where Omega's like, oh, but we got to free all the other pets. And he's like, no. Like, don't push your luck or whatever you said.
Laying the Chekhov's gun, like, right there. I was like, something's going to happen. And, like, yeah.
But great bits of sound design here, because you hear quite a few familiar, like, Star Wars animal creature sounds in here. I heard a porg. I don't know if there was actually a porg in there, but I heard the porg cry in there. I was like, oh, shit, are we going to see porgs in the Bad Batch? We do get a sequel connection at the very end, but I don't think, at least looking back at it, I didn't see any porgs on screen. But I heard a porg, so there's that.
The porg sound effect, for sure.
We get very, like, I don't even know how to describe it here, but just very Star Wars-y in the best way, or like very Rebels-y, I would say, is his climax, because Omega tries to do things her way, and then she lets Crosshair do things his way. He starts gunning down people. She frees Batcher, and then this leads to all the other cages opening up.
Pandemonium.
Wreaking havoc on the Imperials, and the captain very unceremoniously just gets wrapped up by a Rathtar tentacle, and just, that's it. That's all we see of him.
Like, when the box was like, the container was shaking, I was like, please let it be a Rathtar. I really want it to be a Rathtar. And then the tentacles came out. I was like, yes, it's a Rathtar. It's excellent.
That's not what they were saying at Starlight Beacon, though.
Too soon. Okay.
Too soon.
And yeah, exactly. I like seeing Wrath Tars in any situation except on Starlight Beacon. Keep them away from that, and from my precious. Keep them away from my precious Wookiee boy. Leave Buriaga alone. Come on. But I just to go back to like what we said before, like there's that whole tense bit, that standoff just before all the chaos, where the Imperial captain's trying to extort money from Omega, and it's one of my favorite details of the story that Omega at that point accepts. Like, she doesn't have to give the money over, because I was worried for a minute that she would be naive and pay him off again, thinking he'd leave well enough alone. And I like the unspoken bit of writing there that, like, she in that moment realizes he's never going to back off. He will keep trying, he will keep finding new loopholes to like exploit them and basically ensure that they never get off the planet and that they wind up back on Mount Tantiss. And I really liked that she very kind of like non-verbally acknowledges that and then just like pivots to Crosshair's way of doing things. Cause it's like, it's not like saying that her way of doing things is bad necessarily. It literally is just kind of showing that it's really hard to act ideologically pure under a fascist system, because they will constantly force you into, they will constantly force things until the point where you do inevitably kind of have to fight them, and that's kind of what happens here, really. Like, even with the somewhat unorthodox method, it's like, yeah, they do have to ultimately resort to some violence, and it's kind of like a somewhat slightly sombering fact of the episode that's thankfully balanced out with all of the delightful chaos of all the animals breaking loose.
Yeah, definitely. It was a really great way to have this kind of climactic end to the episode.
Yeah.
And them just stealing the freighter, getting out of there. Second episode in a row where they just take an Imperial shuttle
and
haul ass out of there.
Yeah, exactly. That one TK trooper who was like standing there with it. He looked really cool, by the way, with the poncho and the goggles. Yeah, with the
glasses and everything.
Yeah, exactly.
He just gets
yeeted away.
it was a great scene. But they were smart, because the Crosshair kind of catches on fast that they track the ship. So like, we need to ditch this ship and find another one. And then I believe we see Hemlock at the end of the episode too.
We do, yes.
I don't remember exactly what the scene was. But
it's mainly there to remind us, I suppose, that he's hot on their heels, essentially. Like, it's kind of just a reaffirmation that he's chasing them directly, which is kind of cool.
Talking to Nala Se in this episode too, right?
Yes, he basically, like, it's this unspoken thing again where, like, he knows that she helped Omega get free. He can't prove it, but he knows, and there's like a kind of unsettling thing there. I will briefly point out like a theory some people have had, like, about, well, just not a theory, but a detail that people have noticed, because I've only just kind of realized that he's got the one gloved hand, which is interesting. And I kind of wonder, like, because I joked about it, like, either on Twitter or on a Discord server, like, whether he's cloned himself, you know, like, oh, it's Hemlock. But, it never gets old for me. Like, you can literally just, I could keep doing that all day, but like, I could see Hemlock being exactly the kind of person who would clone himself, in order to ensure that he could carry on his work, or basically have an unimpeded legacy. That would be, I mean, we've had that already with Moff Gideon, to be sure, but Hemlock, I feel, is the kind of person who would be able to do that where Gideon failed somewhat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, imagine, like, say, midway through the season, this Hemlock dies, and then another one just shows right back up.
Yeah.
Like, it's possible.
That's very plausible, yeah.
It's very possible with how this season has gone, and how this show has been, just straight off the bat, like, we've mentioned several times, they just straight up replaced villain halfway through a season, and it worked. So exactly. I wouldn't put it past them to do it again. But I don't want them getting rid of Hemlock anytime soon, because as much as I hate the guy, he's such a compelling villain.
And you love to hate him.
You love to hate him, because it's so, like, he makes your skin crawl. And I am just, But it leads to just such a rewarding ending. And this is how conditioned I am to just feel pain in this fandom, because people were tweeting, oh my God, the ending of this episode, I am not okay. I'm like, what the fuck did they do? Like, who did they take? I was expecting, like, oh, them to get kidnapped again at the end. So when they escaped off world again, I'm like, wait a minute, what's happening here?
What's going to happen?
Yeah, what's happening? Like, what is happening? I didn't think a happy ending? What? But they rendezvous on this planet. Some people have pointed out, is this Ryloth? Because it, like they said, is it the moon it that
definitely is the environment, the way it's framed is like definitely the Ryloth moon. That makes a lot of sense, really, as like a rendezvous point. And I've got to say, the shot of the cargo ship, Crosshair and Omega's cargo ship, just like coming into land against the backdrop of Ryloth and the other moon. Gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous, like stretch of animation. Just like
Crosshair is probably like, wait a minute, tip my hat. Didn't I dome that one senator in the head here?
Yeah. Kind of caused a big uprising from what I remember. Were you guys here too?
Were you here too? I thought it was the little Twi'lek girl. And then, but we get, what a reunion. We see the Marauder there. And again, I'm just conditioned, like something bad's going to happen. Like,
I know. I thought it was going to blow wrecker. Up.
Yeah, it's like something.
I thought it was going to explode. Omega was going to run towards it and it was going to explode. And we were going to get a whole episode next week explaining, oh, actually, they weren't on board the Marauder. It was a trap. But thankfully, it wasn't that. Like no, you said, we got a proper lovely reunion between Omega and Wrecker and Hunter. It was a complete surprise. Like I was so expecting. Yeah, because like we were saying, weren't we? Like I said, like back when we talked about the trailer that, and even like the end of Bad Batch season two, that like this was probably, I thought it was going to be like at least halfway through the series that they all reunited. But it's like it's the fourth episode and they're already all back together, and that's such a cool thing, because now we literally can spend the rest of the series like focusing on this family, this broken family of brothers and this sister coming back together, and maybe even pivoting to the Clone Rebellion that we kind of thought might not be given as much focus even in this season. That was really unexpected and cool. Yeah.
Just the moment of Wrecker hugging Omega and then bolting towards Hunter, hugging him. It's like, we searched everywhere for you, but you found us first. I was like,
I felt that.
It's like, oh, I had some help. And then Crosshair walks off the ship, and then there's just the stare down. Chills, it's like, man. Give him a hug. This man needs a hug.
I mean, I that's the thing. I didn't expect that reaction initially, but looking back, it's like, of course they would both react that way. Of course they would both look at Crosshair with this immediate feeling of distrust. And it's like, I know some people were surprised about it, just going by some of the reactions on social media, but like looking back, it makes sense. Cause like during season one, they kind of still wanted Crosshair back. They wanted Crosshair to come with them and he refused. And then in season two, when they went to go and get Crosshair, that was costly for them. Tech, as far as we know, died. And that led to Omega getting taken to Tantis. Cid betrayed them. They lost a lot just trying to go and get Crosshair. And again, the additional stinger is it was Tech who insisted that they go and get Crosshair, and he perished because of it. And so you kind of get the feeling that, of course they're going to resent Crosshair and they're going to look at him with distrust. It's like, you know, they wanted him to come back and he turned his back on them repeatedly. And it's cost them so much. So I'm really looking forward to them actually spending I'm hoping next episode is going to spend some time like showing them healing the rift that's happened. Omega is obviously going to be like Lindsay Lohan in The Parent Trap. She's going to want the two halves of her family to come back together. She knows Crosshair has changed since they last met. So
I think it's going to be very season three of Avatar, where they're just slowly Zuko is slowly gaining the trust of the rest of the group. And I think you're going to get that. I think maybe the end of next episode we get something, but I think it's going to be icy for at least the next few, and then I wouldn't be shocked if, like, at the mid-season point, we get the big, oh, they're all coming together again type of moment. But, like, we know that he's against the Empire at this point. But, like, imagine if they just leave him again. I'll be fucking furious.
That would be terrible.
But, like, we know he has his Bad Batch armor again just by the trailers. So, like, they still have to have it. Like,
yeah, there's gonna be like a whole bit of them like taking, like, them just sort of reluctantly kind of taking it out and go, well, you might as well have this, you know, we always hold on to it.
Mm-hmm.
Which means he's probably going to be in the best nick out of all of them. Like, their armor's all scratched and stuff, and his armor's probably all pristine because he's not worn it and it's not been used for like years.
I think a very interesting thing that could happen is because of Crosshair's kind of tremor that he has in his hand. Because he's been the sharpshooter the whole time. If they go on a mission and they still don't fully trust him and he screws up and he isn't able to make that shot and they take it out on him and they get angry and just blow up at him, I think that could be a very compelling scene and something that could happen. But I'm give our boy a chance.
I'd love that personally. Yeah, I'd love that personally because, again, this is doing something kind of different in terms of a redemption story, because usually, as we've discussed before, the character, the bad guy, will redeem themselves and then kind of immediately die, and the hero generally doesn't have enough time to react to it fully. Like, you know, like Luke and Rey only have so much time to react to, like, Vader or Ben Solo turning back towards the light. And usually there's not enough time to pass the kind of nuances of, like, oh, well, you've come back to the light and you've done the right thing in the end, but you still did some pretty bad shit. Yeah. And, you know, we kind of need to grapple with that. And it's like Obi-Wan started changing things up a bit with what happened with Reva and how Obi-Wan had to make a conscious decision to forgive her of what she did as an Inquisitor and help her back to the light that way, and how that was kind of informed by his whole conflict with Anakin Vader over that season. So I'm excited to see this kind of progress, because this is the first time we're going to see a villain on the path to redemption in Star Wars who's going to get called out and have to kind of deal with the kind of ugly reality of their actions while they served the Empire. That's going to be really interesting and different. I trust Brad Rau and Jennifer Corbett to kind of like handle this transition for Crosshair as he comes back to the Bad Batch.
Especially since we have, hopefully, an entire season of that to go off of. And
exactly.
I'm interested in seeing where it goes. Side note, in between the last time we recorded and now, I rewatched The Outpost. It still hits so much.
Lieutenant.
It's so good.
Gives me goosebumps, that line. Yeah. Oh, so good.
Like, I think it's like arguably the perfect redemption episode in terms of just watching a character go from one end to the other throughout the whole stretch of an episode. It's just great. So we know that there's gonna be a lot going against the Empire, and the Batch are back together. Hopefully we'll see Rex and Echo again fairly soon.
How much do you think, I just realized, how much do you think Wrecker's going to love Batcher? He's going to love
Batcher. Oh, gonna, my God.
We got to, you got a dog. I love dogs.
Mm-hmm.
We got to have a shot as well of like Hunter and Batcher just like stalking someone together, like proper, like, yeah. And that would look super cool, like a space warrior and his wolf or his space doggy. That would be like, that'd be great.
Well, Dave Filoni, if he has his way, he'll be like, all right, Brad, Jennifer, throw a wolf in.
Just please, Brad, Jennifer, don't do a never-ending story though. All right, I know that you have the potential to do it.
This
don't
is
do
two
a never-ending
episodes
story
in a row where I thought he might die at the very end.
I know, I was so worried that Batcher was done for.
It might happen. I mean, we're getting a wolf this season. We're getting Commander Wolf.
Yeah, but that's going to be really interesting. And that brings me to kind of the question about the next episode. Like, because the next episode is titled The Return. And obviously my first thought is it's going to be Ventress, probably, because it makes sense to kind of introduce her this early if she's going to play a big role. But it could mean someone else. It could mean Wolf. It could mean Rex, potentially.
I'm starting to think it means Crosshair and Omega like returning to the group, but it could be Wolf. It could
that's
be
a more thematic. That's a more thematically appropriate reason.
I think it would be a bit like, I mean, it could be Ventress, and I could be eating my words because it could be fantastic, but I think it could be a bit much to immediately throw Ventress into the equation, like right after this whole reunion happened. But maybe it's Fennec or Cad Bane. We know they play a role in this season. There's several options of what it could
Nightmare
be.
Nightmare scenario is it's Sid.
I'll die. I it's not going to be great.
I'd be here for an episode that's just like that's just Sid getting roasted by the batch for like 40 whole minutes of like of her like turning on them, and then maybe she has to make a sacrifice to like redeem herself at the 11th hour. That would be
no redemption. I'll allow a Disney Plus special. I don't want it.
There's a Doctor Who meme for you, Andrew. There's like a scene of like one of the companions in Doctor Who like opening the door, seeing someone they don't like, and going, "Nope," and just shutting the door. That's you with Sid.
That's me with Sid. I'm gonna have to find the clip and edit that at some point into
it. I'll send you the clip. It's worth it. God. Yeah, no, it is absolutely. That's I mean that's the For the Republic's official policy on Sid. Nope.
Slams door. It's perfect. That is perfect.
Guys, come on. I'm sorry.
No. Go away. You ruined
so go much. Away. Nobody likes you.
But yeah, the return is next week. It is going to be just a few short days. Comes up. I'm a birthday, so I'm very excited. I don't know when I'm going to be able to watch it because I have to do this horrible thing called work on my birthday. So that'll be... But that'll be fun to get a little birthday Star Wars treat for me. But yeah, no, we will be covering that later in the week. We might have a guest on. I'm not going to say anything yet because we were supposed to have one on this week. And because of the scheduling conflicts, we had to push it to this coming week. So I'll let you guys know around when we get closer to recording time. Check our social media at For the Repub Pod on Twitter and at For the Republic Pod on Instagram and TikTok for updates on the upcoming episodes. But yeah, stay tuned for our next recap of the Bad Batch. As for us, where can we find us? Starting with Donovan.
So you can find me on Twitter at Donovan Mead, TikTok at Donovan McComish, Instagram at Donovan_McComish, Threads you can find me Donovan_McComish2, and Blue Sky at DonovanMcComish.bsky.social. I'm also a question writer for Star Wars in a Galaxy Epic Confrontations, which is a like trivia like matchup series that Eli and Connor do as well. We just had like a recent episode go out with Michael Modello and Claire Stribling, which was really cool. So yeah, if you like some Star Wars trivia, definitely tune in for that. We try our best to like plumb the depths of like different kind of Star Wars information. But yeah, there's also SWEF. I am a writer and executive producer for SWEF, which is a thing I'm involved with alongside Connor and Jake and Austin over at This Is the Wayseekers. We do a bunch of and produce a bunch of Star Wars fan stories that take place in and around the Star Wars timeline. We try to stay within the confines of what's canon with currently going on with Star Wars, but we also like to take a few things from Legends where we can if it's not like too like glaring. I've written one story in the SWEF line that came out in 2022. It was called Scars of War. It takes place not too long after Revenge of the Sith, and it stars a clone trooper called Blister, who, after the events of Order 66, meets up with a Jedi who survived the horrific betrayal of the clone troopers known as Shaar Kuhn. And the story is essentially about them all both processing their shared trauma over that event. So if you like Star Wars and pain, give it a read.
Yeah, very painful, but very good. I definitely recommend it. As for myself, you can find me Instagram, TikTok, Twitter at Starlight Andrew. As I mentioned, our pod socials at For the Repub Pod on Twitter, at For the Republic Pod, Instagram, and TikTok for future updates on the show. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel, For the Republic Podcast, and check us out Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to your podcast. It really helps out that show a lot. The StarlightJournal.blog is my film blog. I recently posted a new post yesterday going over my watches in February. I'm sure I'll be writing about Dune because I'm seeing it tonight. So again, you can watch me watching Dune and not shutting up about it for the next week.
I mean, I haven't stopped talking about Baldur's Gate since I started playing it. So, yeah. You know, I kind of owe you several Dune rants.
I'm going through a phase right now. And then the Oscars are this weekend. So I have a couple different articles planned. Hopefully I'll have at least one or two of them out before the actual show happens. But it's a lot of words and it's going to be a busy weekend. So we'll see how that goes. But a lot of fun stuff coming soon. And then as for the show, like we said, Bad Batch episode 5, we'll talk later in the week. And then within the next couple weeks, we'll be back with our Clone Wars rewatch as well. We're just trying to pace ourselves during the show and see how it goes. So yep. We'll see you guys later. And until next time, may the Force be with you. Always.